Hello, folks, and welcome to the March 2nd Ares Working Group call. This is a Hyperledger call. We have an antitrust policy and a Hyperledger code of conduct in force. Please be mindful of those, and it helps make our workplace excellent. You are welcome to add yourself to the agenda as an attendee if you like, or make any other adjustments that would be useful for the community. Anyone new today that would like to introduce themselves? All right, glad you're all here. Some announcements. We have a Cardia Interopathon. There are some details here. You got to scroll down a minute. Here's the invitation and the description of what's going on. One of the notable things that's happening is that the conversion to the out-of-band invitation stuff that we have been talking about, and we have a community coordinated update, will be part of that testing. So if you would like to come and test that aspect of what's going on, then you are very welcome to. Mike. Any additions to what I've announced about that?
No, we're just on the last phases of scrambling to have the reference implementation ready. So that should be soon. So people can have source code and an example agent to play with before they have to tinker with their own.
Awesome. There's a sign up here if you are planning on attending, and that way some organization can happen to help that move smoothly. I was going to ask Stephen about the Anand Creds progress. There was a good meeting, and as folks, the companies are working through the community standards specification license that work is being done under, but that stuff's actually going well. And then I will not announce this forever, but just as it's new, the first DIDCOM users group meeting was last week in the Discord channel. Those are asynchronous type meetings, and so they're easier to attend because you don't have to show up at an exactly specific time. So that is also going on and starting there. Any release or any announcements I'm missing? Okay. Any release status or work updates that folks want to share?
If there's more people on the call than last week, I would again try to get some feedback on the device binding Ares RFC draft that I showed last week. Maybe that could be something for the agenda.
I'm happy to throw that on there, and that would be good. I also mentioned that the post you made in the Ares channel, I discovered as part of the process of trying to tag Daniel Hardman that Daniel Hardman hadn't yet joined the server. So I pinged him about that, sent him an invite, and he'll be doing so. And Paul, when I get down to the agenda stuff, something that we had talked about before but didn't yet discuss was standardizing attribute names in Anand Creds credentials for various purposes. So I don't know if you're prepared to talk about that, but I think that's a topic that we could use as well. And Nathan, your hand's up.
Just if you have been thinking about attending the Hyperledger URSA call and have not because it conflicts with this call, the URSA call has been moved to the hour right following this call. So if you're interested in helping to participate with BBS signatures, making sure that the cryptography code is consolidated down into one place where we can better audit it and secure it, please join us at, I guess it would be 8 o'clock Pacific time for the URSA call right after this one.
Excellent. I did see that announcement. Thanks for sharing, Nathan. All right. Any release status or work updates that folks want to share? All right. For our agenda today, I wanted to talk briefly about Discord. I was going to pull this off the list and then discovered folks that weren't on the Hyperledger Discord server yet. So I'm going to leave it on here probably just this last week. Sean Bohan is here as part of one of the community architects, right? Sean, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm just going to give a quick presentation on community architects and our outreach to the different projects and some of the stuff that community architecture can do to support Ares.
Yes. So he'll be doing that. We have an RFC that needs to get discussed. This is the revocation notification V2. It's been under primary discussion, but we have an RFC now as a PR about that. And then I was planning to have a quick conversation about backup and restore for agents. This is one of the work items that I took on from the Aries Mobile Summit. And this is a cross-cutting one in that it doesn't just apply to mobile stuff. And I wanted to bring that up and ask some questions of those building projects in the community. There are more people here. Paul, if you would like to, do you want me to throw on your review of the device binding?
Yeah, I can give a short introduction again, or maybe I link the my post from the Discord channel. What do you think is best idea? Should I give a brief introduction and then ask the core questions again, or
let's see what? Yes, I think probably brief introduction and kind of the questions to draw attention to it, I think would be useful. I think it's an important topic and it didn't get a lot of immediate feedback, and so highlighting it here I think would be useful. Cool. Any other adjustments we want to make to the agenda before we get started? Okay, here's my pitch. There's a link here to join the Discord server. The Rocket Chat server is now read-only and it won't last forever. The Discord is here. It's so much more stable and polished and useful in all the ways. There are a handful of other projects that have made similar jumps. And so that's a useful thing, and we have more than just sort of one thing in the community. And so that is available, and the link is here in the agenda. And so if you're curious, I will link that again. So you have that link, please go join up and sign up. It's pretty easy to do. And then you can have access to all the things. It is possible, by the way, to mute channel groups for the projects that you're not necessarily interested in. I demoed that last week. And so if you're just trying to focus in on Indy or Aries or Ursa or any of the common ones or any of the other projects that you are commonly involved in, then that's a useful thing to do. Any questions, or has anyone had struggles moving to the Discord server for chat? Okay, please reach out if you do. Happy to help you and make that happen. Sean, why don't I pass it over to you?
Thank you, sir. And thank you for having me today. Let me get the deck up and running. So my name is Sean Bohan. I'm a community architect at Hyperledger. I was on the team that initially contributed Indy back in the dawn of time, i.e. 2017. And then I left. Now I came back. Part of the purpose of this deck is just outreach to the individual projects. For a very long time, community architecture, we were supportive and slightly reactive, and we are engaging the projects directly. And this deck is part of that charm offensive, emphasis on charm, not the offensive thing. But real quick, defining community architecture, myself, David, and Rye, why do we exist? Specifically, community health, project growth, and support. Fostering a successful collaborative software development ecosystem, documenting the health of the projects and the community, and helping the projects grow. Those are our reasons for being. We support the projects with onboarding, awareness, marketing, contribution, training and certification, security audits, documentation, legal, developer engagements, as well as resources that we all know and love, like GitHub, the wiki, the mailing list, Zoom. As Sam said earlier about Discord, you know, we have never gotten this many nice comments about anything we've done. And all the credit goes to the chat task force and Rye, who's done the majority of the work, getting this Discord set up, getting the boosts in place. And we're, you know, it's just, we're only a week or two in, but it's been pretty great. And thank you for all the positive feedback. From an infrastructure perspective, as I mentioned before, we maintain chat, the email list, GitHub, and the Zoom to YouTube infrastructure. This is something that we're working on this year so that when a community call like this happens, it's automatically pushed to Zoom after the video encodes. And we also support the TSC. we facilitate and organize the meetings. We make sure there's an agenda. We make sure that if there is a vote that we capture it, we may suggest agenda items to the TSC of things that we're seeing in the community. But overall, our goal is to drive successful adoption of open source practices. We engage the TSC on their needs. We engage the projects and the maintainers on their priorities and needs. We engage contributor communities. We part of our purpose, and one of the things we're really working hard on this year and in future years is going to be growing a pipeline of contributors, getting more folks into the projects. We also engage external communities, whether it's NIST or Internet Identity Workshop or the Historically Black Colleges and Universities. And we're going to start doing more research with the community on their needs. And that's project by project. That is contributors in general, maintainers in general. What are the best practices for things that we're doing? But also getting folks in who may not necessarily be an engineer, but they want to participate in Hyperledger. And that could be through organizing SIGs and working groups or documentation. But the biggest thing for us this year is growth, growing the projects, connecting community members and attracting contributors. Connecting community members is important for me from the perspective of how do we build bridges between Ares and the other projects? How do we make sure if Caliper is planning something for 2022, and they are, their priority right now is Fabric, but how do we make sure that they reach out to the Ares community and we can start a dialogue? We grow external communities. So to educate them on the mission of Hyperledger and the individual projects, but also opportunities to learn. I mentioned before this idea of a contributor pipeline. We want to be more proactive in attracting people to work with Hyperledger projects, to contribute to Hyperledger projects, to take a Hyperledger project into their company or their organization or their college. We're doing this through events, workshops, contribution campaigns, and I'm going to get into all those in a second. And then growing the maintainer pipeline. This is something that we have a pin in, and we're going to start talking about probably next quarter, but like, what are the best practices for maintainers? Not that every project isn't different, because every project is, and the folks working on the projects are different, and Fabric has a different culture than Ares, but what are the best practices that we can share with the project? So when we get contributors in, we can recognize their contribution and how much work they're putting into the different projects and get them on that path to maintainer if that's something that they want. How do we do this? We do it through amplification events and being more hands-on. I'm going to go through these in a sec. But most important, you know, to start with amplification, getting the word out. Every project has an amazing story, and we want to get that story out along with the stories of the people contributing to it and the companies using it. We signal boost content right now. So YouTube streams, we have Dev Weekly, we have the Global Forum, which is a live event. We have Twitter, we have LinkedIn. But most importantly, we need project content. If there is a contributor who's awesome, you know, nominate them or recommend them for a developer showcase post. Topical blog posts. I'm talking to the community. I'm talking to the bc.gov folks right now about doing a blog post around their Code With Us bounties and why they do them and how they do them and what have been the results. Case studies, you know, when there is an implementation of Ares in the wild or somebody is contributing something to it that we think is, that the community thinks is great. Let's get that in there. Release announcements. Timo and I are going back and forth on Discord right now about getting a blog post together for the Ares JavaScript framework release. And then let's have a virtual meetup to announce and share the release and the details behind it and get people excited about it. We want to do this for every project, and we don't want to wait to find out a release has gone out and we weren't ahead of it. And more importantly, we want to make sure that all the projects know they can come to community architecture and we can help amplify and boost these ideas and these stories. But the big thing for me is finding new contributors and growth. And we've got a bunch of tactics that we can apply. These all won't apply to every project. So as an example, Caliper right now is in a big reboot phase. They're really focused on Fabric. They may not have all the prerequisites to do a workshop, and we're going to talk about them in a second. So maybe, but they are ready for a mentorship program. So the mentorship program is the first one. Mentorship is much better than internship, but these are getting mentees and projects and a mentor together to build something new using the Hyperledger projects. Contributor campaigns, we did 4 of these last year. They actually were really, they had a great result. And one of the reasons why I'm giving this presentation now is after those contribution campaigns were completed, we should have had a line at the door of projects asking us, hey, where's mine? and we didn't. And that's something we realized that, like, yeah, we can do great work for the individual projects, but if we're not sharing that work with all the projects, we as community architects are missing the mark. Helping you find new contributors with the Hyperledger Challenge. And this is an enterprise-grade distributed ledger technology leveraging one or more Hyperledger projects. This is basically an innovation competition. There are over 20 projects right now currently listed. This is different from the mentorship. It's a different program. But then we also have things, and the folks on this call already know, like the hands-on workshops that Indicio did for Aries and Indy were fantastic. We had 300 people sign up for each one. Or at least 300 people registered. We had about 100 folks show up for each one. So 200 people showed up. There's a lot of overlap between the two. But the workshops were a great example that we are going to take with us to the other projects to say, this is how you can do it and do it right. Were they long? Yeah, they were 4 hours long. Was the content solid? Absolutely. The experience was great. It was hands-on. It wasn't just a bunch of people, you know, giving slides like I am now. But we also got a lot of learning out of it, and we're looking at ways to optimize those. And maybe we do two hours instead of 1 4-hour block. We're working on all that stuff right this second. One of the best things to come out about this, Sam Curran, you can start blushing right now, is Sam did a 10-minute piece on why contribute. And I've got it. I'm going to put out links in the Aries Discord in a little bit. But it is a fantastic sort of level set for why you're here and why you can contribute and why we need your help and what we expect as a community of interaction. What you should be able to expect is being treated like, you know, a great person. We do the upfront, you know, code of conduct stuff. We're also doing academic outreach. This is something that we had started a couple of years ago and for a number of reasons didn't really execute. We're doing a project right now with historically Black colleges and universities in the United States called Build Your Own NFT with Hyperledger Fabric. This is content that has been developed by partner Chainyard. In the same way that Indicio created the Indy and the Aries workshops, Chainyard is developing this program for starting with Morgan University. The great thing about it is it's two-hour sessions. It's to get college students interested. Obviously, NFTs are a hot topic, but let's use that as a Trojan horse to get them into Fabric. But the HBCU program, and specifically Morgan, is offering incentives to the professors to incorporate this into their coursework, into their courseware for the next semester. So we're really excited in that not only are these students going to get, you know, a couple of sessions about Fabric and how it works and doing an NFT project, but this is also going to be built into their academic year, which is super exciting. But most importantly, we listen to you. And that's the thing that we were doing, I thought, pretty well, and we need to keep doing it. But also we want to let the projects know that we need your help. We're always looking for feedback and ideas. So communityarchitects@hyperledger.org, community-architects@hyperledger.org, community-architects on Discord. We're going to do some more surveys and polls during the year because I can ask people directly, but we want to get sort of the pulse of what's going on in the community. What is working? What's not working? Hey, would you like to see X? Hey, have you seen Y? More idea of Hyperledger projects in the wild. If you know of an implementation of Aries somewhere or a company that's considering implementing Aries, let us know. I was out of the community for a while. And when I started here, a friend from Salesforce reached out to say, hey, we did something with Aries actually, which was super exciting. The way we're set up, anyone can use open source. Anyone can take this code and run with it, which is awesome. But it means Hyperledger doesn't know that, and we can't celebrate those projects unless we find out. For me, bridge building, how can we connect your project to the other projects? How do I set up a bridge between Caliper and Aries, and or Caliper and Indy, or the folks doing Tape, which is one of the labs? But most importantly for us, and that's a mistake, sorry, live editing. What are the goals and objectives for Aries in 2022, and how can we support you? And we're going to be working more directly with the projects to make sure that we are supporting against those goals and objectives. But also in Q4 this year, we're going to be reaching out to all the projects to say, what are your goals and objectives for 2023? So that we can be ahead of it. We can identify what are the tactics that we can use or bring to bear that are going to help the individual projects get together, move forward. Last up is some of the feedback. I believe all of these come from the Aries and the Indy workshops. My favorite is the one from Hyperledger Latino America Regional Chapter. And we have reached out to Indicio to start a conversation. Can we do maybe, if not the 4 hour, maybe we can do, you know, the 2 hour upfront, you know, how does decentralized identity work? Why is this important in Spanish? And, you know, something like Siemens is also something I love to see, where a very large company, which is working with decentralized identity, is showing up to our events, not just because it makes Hyperledger look good, but it means we're resonating with large corporations, which is kind of cool. The last slide is just a bunch of links. I'm going to throw these links into Discord after we're done. But does anyone have any questions for me as far as how community architecture can work with what y'all are doing? I don't want to take up too much time in the meeting, but I want to be available. And I'm always on Discord. If somebody wants to just reach out directly, feel free. Thank you. Am I muted? No, I'm not. Good.
You're not muted.
Sam and Nathan know that's something I say a lot because I'm constantly worried about being muted. So.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys. I do appreciate it.
Any comments, questions for Sean?
I would have replied earlier, but I was muted.
Nathan?
I was just going to say, Sean, when you ask for feedback, you gotta honor the Nathan and wait a long time.
I shouldn't ask if I'm muted. Is anyone else muted? That's what I should be asking.
Thanks, Sean. Awesome. It's good to see Hyperledger come out and support the community with things that are sometimes hard when you're also writing code. So thank you.
And part of our goal is to get more folks to write that code. We as a group or as a team don't want to build a contributor pipeline of people who trip across Hyperledger or whose boss said, hey, look at this thing. We want Hyperledger to be something that I want to contribute to, something that I think is important. Oh, hey, there's this thing over here I can join in. Oh, Hyperledger is working with the thing with Kubernetes. Like, what's this about? And we want to create a lot of those opportunities and build that pipeline.
Yeah. Excellent, Sean. Thank you for coming and sharing that. And appreciate the work you do to support stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff we don't see because you do your job well. So we appreciate all of your efforts. Next on the agenda, we have an RFC. I don't think James is here today to defend his work, but he has submitted a PR here for a revocation notification V2. This has been discussed in previous calls. There is a change here in that the revocation format and the credential ID are specific to the revocation method, and this handles this does a couple of useful things. One is that it more specifically accommodates revocation without introducing some brand new identifier. Necessarily, it allows each method to use their own. And then here is, for example, defined for Indian non-creds, the revocation ID and an example of what it actually looks like. And so this would be the revocation format field, and the credential ID would follow this format for Indian non-creds whenever the format is so indicated. And so we had some discussions about whether this was worth the a major rev of the protocol, and the answer was yes because of the changing semantics. And so James has gone ahead and done this and submitted it. So I'm bringing this up for two reasons. One is that we want to get feedback from anyone who has seen this or has experience in the area and has some adjustments that they think would be useful. And secondarily, to see if anyone has any objections to merging this. We have don't formally usually do this, but because of the importance with revocation, I want to sort of bring it up and see if there's any feedback in the meeting before we do so. Keith wrote the original version one, and then this is the improvements that have been made on top of that for some more flexibility in the revocation identifier. Previous one required maintaining the thread under something that a credential was received under. That's complicated with multiple issuance, and also might require the agents to track something they haven't really done before, which is the thread it was received under. And so this eliminates the need to store that additional value, but still be able to find the credential in your credential store. Awesome. Okay. We'll go ahead and get that approved. And we can move on. I quickly wanted to have a conversation about backup and restore. This is something that I have worked on or committed myself to making progress on as part of the Aries mobile summit that we held last year. The goal of this is to enable a format for backup and restore that is common enough that it can be used minimally across projects, but also within a project. And this can be really useful, for example, if a user is moving from one instance to another of the same app, or they would like to move some sort of minimum details between apps. Obviously, the larger goal is portability between apps. But the idea is to take baby steps in getting there rather than trying to solve the problem wholesale once and for all. So I have a question today that I'll describe, and then I want to talk a little bit more while you're thinking about the question. The question is, what should we start with things that are common between applications? The basic design that I have in mind has a combination of common standard schemas that should be understood by all compliant applications, but also the ability to include app-specific backup details that can restore things or move things between the instances of the same app that are not yet part of that sort of common standard schema thing. For example, there's a difference between backing up all of the contacts that are present in someone's agent and maybe remembering the most frequently used sort order. The sort order would be part of something that's app specific. All the contacts themselves might be part of what is standard, and this mechanism allows for both of those to occur. Nathan, your hand is up.
Do you have an analogy for this that would work? I mean, I'm in my head, I'm thinking about the OVF, OVA archive files for virtual machines as an example of this, where, you know, they took all of this, the functionality they thought was common across all of them, and they built a serialization format around that. Is that kind of the spirit of this?
Yeah. So, we should have really made more progress on this in the community than we have, right? It's a goal that we all have to do backup and restore and to make that happen. There has been some work done in the universal wallet specification, but I'll talk about why I don't feel like that's complete. My goal is not necessarily to intentionally differentiate where it's not necessary, but there's some additions I think that would make this substantially more usable. And part of that is the app-specific backup, allowing for a container of application-specific format or whatever is necessary, so that in a backup, so that when you restore it to the same app, you get all of the details, not just that you're not constrained to just the ones that we standardize as a beginning. Paul, your hand's up.
Have you put thought into how backup and restore works with link secrets?
So, yes, but the deeper question there is how backup and restore actually works when you have a private key that you can't actually get to, that's in a key store of some sort, et cetera. And that is under consideration, but it's mostly how do we note that and basically future work is how we enable key rotation in that event. Say, for example, I have keys on my mobile device. I drop my phone in the ocean. I get a new phone. I install the app. I restore a recent backup, but now I don't have those keys. How can I create new keys and then appropriately rotate to those new keys? And so there are several conversations that dovetail together here, and that's kind of one of them. The initial attempt will be working on stuff that can actually be exported. And so if, for example, if you had a software key store that had a link secret private key in it, you would be able to restore that from only those that actually have that in more or less a software defined situation where you do actually have access to backup those keys, as opposed to, those that, you know, in a hardware solution that prevent exporting entirely. Does that make sense, Paul?
Partly. I think that probably most credentials can be stored in software because that makes them able to backup and restore. I was thinking of the situation if you start on wallet A to get credentials and maybe you get credentials on wallet B, therefore they will not necessarily have the same link secret. So if you want to move them together with backup and restore kind of to one wallet, so the issue of portability, then you have two different link secrets. So that, is there any solution to this? Do you see anything, or is this discussed somewhere?
So it isn't discussed, but I think should be kind of mentioned in the work. That I think that our initial stab at this work will not really address the combining aspect, being able to move things between wallets, but is more a wholesale backup and a wholesale restore. Now, what you point out is good and valuable. I don't mean that that's not an important thing to work on, but I feel like it's a great thing to work on after we've got something basic working at all.
I'm just going to jump in because my hand is already raised.
Please do.
So I have three things. First, just a response to that. There is some design around the idea of link secret rotation. The idea is if I embed a commitment to what or to how I derive off the current link secret to where I can derive a subsequent link secret, it would be possible to let me rotate the link secret or to make a commitment that shows that the previous link secret is attached to the current link secret. But there's a bunch of problems with that from a who is the actual holder and is it the issuer, is the issuer the only one that's allowed to do that binding standpoint? So we should probably parking lot that item as a new work item. It's a lot like key rotation. Second thing is, how do we want to organize this conversation to get through kind of the breadth of what's already out there in the community? It sounds like there's some good links to some work that's happened either at Trust over IP or some other places that the rest of us probably ought to catch up on. And then third, I have some specific questions around how app-specific elements can work, because part of what we really hope for out of those is when something good comes out of an app, everybody else can say, yeah, that's great. We should all do that. And how do we encourage some convergence there as opposed to encourage people to hoard their own proprietary extensions?
So on that final one, Nathan, the goal of the app-specific backup is not necessarily to promote deviation or differences, but rather allow a common format to be used instead of having to do two. So the reason behind that is that as this expands and more things become common in a standardized backup format, you don't end up with a situation where people aren't really using the backup format because they want to be able to enable app-specific backup features. And so by combining the two, I believe that that provides a natural motivation to just use the one format rather and have it be a part of a regular thing. That does mean that that backup and restore file is going to be a little bit large because some of those things may be redundantly stored. I think that's worth the cost of sort of unifying on a format that allows you to make this happen. That way there's not two that you're dealing with, but rather just one, and you're able to shove some custom stuff in there. And that's the goal there. I had this thought way back when Ori was originally promoting the Universal Wallet 2020 spec. We had conversations. He decided that it didn't hold place in the spec, and as a result, it didn't make it in there. I think this is a useful mechanism for us to be able to make this work. But reasonably speaking, what you actually get out of a backup depends a little bit on whether you're restoring to the same application or not. By having a common schema elements, this does allow for the use or portability of things. So that we do have the ability to, or the goal at least, to enable the portability between applications for those common elements. This is cross-cutting in the sense that Obviously, backup for mobile is like a super hot topic because it's harder to back up in other ways. But there isn't any reason why this shouldn't be something that is supported with enterprise agents as well. You tend to have more robust databases behind them, and you're ideally backing those databases up. But there's situations where it might be nice to pull your data out of one instance and stick it into another instance of the same application, but in a way that is manageable by a user in some sense, rather than you know, having to be a sysadmin to do it. For example, if I have a hosted instance of some agent in the cloud, you know, being able to export that data and hand it to a different, either the same software, but at a different provider, or maybe self-hosted or whatever else, and make that work, I think is a really valuable thing. And so that's the goal there behind this. So, and I fully expect this work to like to motivate some additional discussions in various areas, like Nathan, you mentioned leak secret rotation. And hopefully this provides sort of a foundation or a reason to motivate that work rather than and exist to support it rather than to try and confuse the matter. Part of my question is, where should we start for commonality? There's a tension here. The simpler this is from the get-go, the easier it will be for folks to jump on the initial version of what we do. But there's got to be enough to actually make it useful, right? And so the three that I had identified as potential things could be connection details for known contacts, like who do I know, who's in my contact list, and what are their DIDs and potentially DID docs if it's a peer DID situation. What are the DIDs and keys that I have? That's highly related to the connection details, as often they will be linked to the specific contacts. And then credentials that I hold. And those are the three things that I had identified initially. And so looking for feedback on whether there are additional things that ought to be in that list, or if we can pare that down to make it simpler as we get started. Nathan.
Our big advantage at Hyperledger, and particularly with Aries, is that we're implementation focused. So my strongest suggestion here is, let's be really pragmatic about let's make our backup and restore work for what's in our code base now. And let's try to make it implementation and test driven, because that will make it so that the standard side of the discussion is much easier, because we'll have a practical implementation to talk about. We won't have to talk about all the possibilities in theory until after we've gotten through the practical issues. Because there's a lot of discussions when you start doing a theoretical standardization practice that seem really important at the time, but turn out not to matter much.
I completely agree with that. However, we've already got multiple code bases. So this isn't the type of thing that we're trying to implement in one code base, but we're trying to make this common across the code bases as part of the Aries project.
Well, my proposal there is, let's all make one. Just take whatever stuff you have and get it into a file, and let's put three files next to each other, or whatever, however many files we end up with that way. And we don't have that many implementations that we can't just say, serialize what you've got, let's compare.
I agree. Part of that is like, hey, let's pick a format for serialization. What I intend to do is propose one that then we can debate, right, to make that happen. The goal here is not to come up with something magically new that we all have to provide, although there's very little being done as far as backup and restore. I do know that in the .NET world, they have a backup and restore, but it is not really intended to be parsable by other implementations. It's very specific to the .NET framework. And so that's good in the sense that that's a good start on app-specific backup, but doesn't really specify a serialization format that's usable outside or in the other code bases that we have.
We had a serialized, deserialized set of functions in Indie SDK. Are any of the frameworks still using that core Indie SDK implementation for this?
I think we do have some. Is anyone still using Indie SDK at the core? I know that the Bifold is, I think, at some level at the core under Aries Framework JavaScript. Timo, any comments there?
Yeah, I just opened a PR this week that adds export-import methods through the Indie SDK, but we haven't had that before, so export was not possible. But I know for Aries Oscar, Andrew has said to like not
take that approach anymore. And he says you should just make take an SQL dump or programmatically like take out everything from the database and put it in a format that you can share with other agents. So not the method anymore that's currently implemented in the SDK.
Well, and perhaps with some work in this direction, it might be able to motivate some direct support in Asgard for that. I'm highly reluctant to begin solely with the work inside of Indie SDK, because I don't believe we can get to a better place from there without adding extra support around it. For example, the app specific backup could be an Indie SDK backup and restore. But
yeah, I'm just looking for footholds so that people who are working on code know where to start.
Absolutely. And it's and by app specific backup, the other thing that I'll mention there is that if you are using something under the covers here, there's certainly the ability that if you have two things using sort of the same backup and restore underlying mechanism, that that app specific backup would actually work across apps as long as they're using the common one. And then the goal would be to serialize these other items in a useful way, so that we can make use of them as they transfer. So any feedback on the starting schemas, whether they're too big or too small for an initial attempt at trying to make this work? No feedback at all? That either means no one cares or I nailed it, and I'm not sure which is true.
I'm still not sure how to turn this into a set of tickets and tasks. I feel like if we write out all the possibilities of what we want from it first, I understand the idea of having a design going in before we try to implement it, but I'm afraid of a design driven implementation here, because I don't know who would want to go code up a design, or who would take time out of their product roadmap to go code up a design that kind of happened from a clean piece of paper. So I'm trying to figure out how can we approach this in a way that will help make everyone motivated to do the implementation work with all the other things they're working on.
It's my understanding that precious few of our projects are actually doing backup and restore as active practice. So given that, I'm not sure that I'm very concerned about folks trying to alter what they're currently doing. I think that having a common thing that we come up with and discuss as a community is likely to motivate far more backup and restore than we currently have.
But the one approach doesn't have to exclude the other approach, right? I think starting with something like, what do we want to have in these models? And then also looking at the current implementations and see what do they currently store in a connection record? Because I know between the different frameworks, there are a lot of common attributes and there are some non-common attributes. And just, I think that approach could work pretty well, right? And then we start from there. Like for an initial version, you need to support this minimal supported object by all the frameworks.
Yeah, I really like Timo's comment here, because then it puts us in a situation of, I'm not worried about supporting backup and restore for everybody, I know if I do it this way, at least I pick up what Timo's working on. And at least I pick up the thing that, that Asgard has, right? And that's where we start to build enough commonality that we can start to have a standards-driven discussion, because right now it's kind of we drew up all how it was supposed to work, but no one actually works that way. That's going to be a lot harder.
Well, it's always been my intention to start with what the software does now. I'm confused at why maybe what I implied was that we were doing something different. So exactly what Timo described is what my intention is, to try to shepherd the process along. Is there something that I said that implied that I had different goals in mind, Nathan?
Well, I guess my concern is that if it's not driven by an actual import-export function I can go and call, that it will get detached from the roadmap pretty fast. That we'll end up with a lot of data object specifications that aren't actually coded or implemented, kind of like what happened to us in the rich schemas efforts.
But the export is very dependent on like the storage schema you use under the hood, which is completely different across all the implementations. So it worked for Indy because the Indy SDK is one implementation that's used by all the frameworks, but the frameworks have diverged quite a lot in what they support. Some are using Indy, some are using Askar. Airstream or Go doesn't support any of them. So it would be really hard to provide a export method here because you need to know the data structure that's stored to be able to make it conform to a certain data object, and requiring all agents to store something in a specific format will, I think, be bad for adoption of such a format, because that would be a lot more work than, I think, writing a transformation function that takes your storage schema and exports it to a format that is defined somewhere.
Got a thumbs up from Paul. My intent is to combine these approaches by having both the translation that Timo just described with the output of whatever supporting export import you already have. So that if you're on Indy, you can just call that. If you're using anything else, you can just call what you've got. Even if it's even if you're calling the sort of the underlying data store's sort of raw component, that would still be something you can call. So the benefit of this is that you there's no need to change your internal implementation in order to make this work, but you can still immediately get benefit out of doing this. And so it sounds like what I ought to do is take an initial draft at how I imagine this working. And then, Timo, like you mentioned, we sort of bring up our schemas and say, great, here's where we're starting from. What are the common pieces that make the most amount of sense? And that way we can pick sort of that common serialization format for the common elements that we're targeting, and then make some progress in that manner. It's also, I think, possible, although we have to discuss the utility of this, to support this more or less standard backup and restore format, but without any of the common elements. That's, of course, a lot less useful for portability, but does make it so that an app can reach sort of the common format at a lowest common denominator very rapidly, because no serialization or deserialization work would be required in any manner. That is not as good for portability, but is definitely an improvement over no backup and restore, if no backup and restore currently is the method here. The other reason for having that sort of standard format is that it means that other things can be developed, like, for example, a protocol for facilitating backups with another party. And even if they don't have the ability to do that across products, just the ability to have a backup and restore sort of standard or method that can be easily implemented by a mobile wallet means we're more likely to have more mobile wallets doing backup and restore than not. And I think that would be a very healthy thing for the community.
Have you checked what Lissy and Trinzic have done? I think they have demonstrated kind of import-export compatible solution. That was more easy, as both are just using in the SDK underneath.
Yes, it's my understanding that they used a .NET specific import export mechanism for the underlying library, which is great for anyone that's using .NET, but doesn't solve the problem for those of us that aren't.
Well, but that does mean we have an open source implementation for it in Aries already, right?
Yes.
The implementation in airframework.net, as I understand it, is just an export using Indy SDK, because they use the same data model that works. So there's not actually an implementation in Aries. It just uses, like, as if you export a database and then import it somewhere else. It's just you know how to extract the data from it because this, the data model is the same, but that won't work across different implementations.
I see. So they're just passing through the underlying database export.
Yeah.
And if they pass through the underlying database export in a way that is understandable to others, they can identify that it's that it is an indie SDK import export, then this could work. It does mean that it might not work with exactly what they have now, but the adjustments would be incredibly minor in order to bring it in line with what those options actually are. We could pursue alternative ideas to allow theirs to work independently of anything else, but I think that could be difficult. So Mike says, I'm paraphrasing here, if we have a proposal and then can compare what we've got with the proposal, that is likely to bring up feedback. And I think that that's very true. So I think we've spent enough time on this topic, enough for me to sort of take the stab at that initial proposal. And so I will go ahead and do that, and then we can see. And if all of the ideas that I come up with are terrible, at least it'll give us something to evaluate them against, and we can come up with the right thing. So I will go ahead and give that a try. With the last couple of minutes, Paul, I wanted to send it your way to bring up and highlight the device binding discussion that we had last week. Do you want to share your screen?
Yeah, I can do it. Quite challenging to get into the topic with 5 minutes left, but I'll try to do my best.
I'd be happy to do a summary if you'd like, but if you, yep, you've already got it. Never mind. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to dig into the details now why we do device binding or anything. So the whole topic originates from a Diff Wallet Security Working Group. And as an output, we would like to have an Aries implementation of this, and right now we're in the process of deciding between different options of how we want to design this, and this is why I come to the DITCOM, to the Aries working group, as we have some DITCOM related decisions here, or Aries protocol related. So the idea roughly is that the issuer sends a nonce to the holder, and then the holder generates a secure key and signs the challenge, and maybe optionally gives a key attestation, and then he sends this back to the issuer. And the issuer can check this and then continue with an issuance or whatever. And the question is, if we do this optionally ahead of a credential issuance, we have option 1A, and that is we define a new DITCOM protocol that we perform before doing the credential issuance. And so this could look like this, that you have basically two messages, and one message is a request, and it says which kind of key storage you accept, and sends the nonce. And then the holder / wallet will answer with a DITCOM response of this protocol. And this includes some form, maybe of an attachment, maybe inline. This is gonna be a discussion as well. And in here is the challenge signature, and optionally maybe a certificate chain. So this is one option to do it. And the other option is that you overlay the existing credential issuance processes. We have the usual propose, offer, request, and issue credential. And we could overlay over offer and request in a way that we put them in here as inline or as an attachment, and we could overlay it. And the first core question would be, like, we're a little bit undecided because both have advantages and disadvantages, which is maybe the better choice. The first one is kind of a more cleaner solution, and you could reuse this protocol for something else. And option B obviously is more compact, has less messages, but we might have issues because we have to do this for different issuance protocols. And it's a little bit unclear because there is this credential preview in here, and this credential preview kind of lacks the key that is transferred later on here. So maybe that would prove a difficulty because this attachment is what is shown to the holder to accept, but we need to include the public key in here, which we don't have yet. So this might be a little bit of an annoyance. And then the question is, how do we bootstrap this process? Should we use a discover feature from DITCOM to get this wallet security capabilities? And pretty much we have the same process with a verification. Do we use decorators with present proof protocols, or do we implement a separate protocol? That's kind of one of the main questions that we have right now that is very areas related. So I would wanted to post it here. Unfortunately, we're out of time.
Paul made an excellent post in the Discord Aries channel, and that would I'll go ahead and drop a link to the post again to highlight it. Any feedback or review that you have there, and he's got these links present as well, will be incredibly helpful. So if you're interested in this topic or you are willing to review it, then that'd be really helpful for Paul. Thanks, folks. Thanks for coming. I hope your week is a great one. Appreciate all the discussion today, and we will see you next week.
Thank you.